Gallup. I'm Muhammad Yunus, and this is the Gallup Podcast. In this episode, as the world seeks to vaccinate against the coronavirus, we speak to two experts who've been working on the issue of public trust in vaccines long before the pandemic erupted. Anna Mauser leads policy and advocacy on vaccines for the Wellcome Trust. Ethan Greenwood is a project manager and senior data analyst at the Wellcome Trust. Anna, Ethan, welcome to the conversation.
Hi, Muhammad.
Hi, Muhammad.
Let's start with some context for our listeners. Anna, why don't you tell us about what is Wellcome's mission and purpose? What do you guys do when you wake up?
Well, Wellcome's a major philanthropic funder, in particular of science and research. And our mission really is to tackle the world's biggest health challenges. And at the moment, that's infectious disease, mental health, and climate and global heating. I work within the vaccines team, and obviously we're highly linked to the sort of challenges of infectious disease that have been with us for a very long time, but obviously in the last year have really come to everybody in the world's attention.
And Ethan, tell us about your role at Wellcome. What in the large sort of wonderful, I want to say army, but it, you know, tribe that is Wellcome. You play a really critical role in that you spend a lot of time with the data you all are gathering and understand what's happening. Tell us about how that works.
Sure. So I came into Wellcome about 7 years ago with a background in social research, so public opinion survey data. One thing to emphasize about Wellcome is it has a really important emphasis on public engagement around science and health. It is important for the public to understand the science because it can improve their health, but also the public are critical in informing scientific developments, participating in scientific research, for example. And in order to be able to do that, we really need to understand what the public think and feel about science and health. So Wellcome was the first, I believe, organization in the world to really start measuring these attitudes to science and health. It started off doing it purely in the UK in 2009. But then we had this great opportunity through the Gallup World Poll to add a module there and ask those questions at a global level. And for example, in 2018, we focused on trust in science, which we believe is critical to health development and most importantly, vaccine attitudes. So you can't really properly engage with understanding how the public will relate to the vaccine unless you know what they think and feel and how trust plays a role in that.
And I look really forward to digging into what we found in those data. Before I want to get to that, though, Anna, how has the pandemic changed what you all do at Wellcome Trust? It's like, you know, you are an organization that's studiously been doing this really important work, and then suddenly everybody in the world is talking about vaccines, talking about trust in science, being bombarded with information, misinformation around scientific facts. How has the pandemic changed what you all are doing?
I mean, my goodness, it has been a huge shift. I think, and it's just over a year ago now, we could never have imagined vaccines being in the public attention in the way that they are now. And that's not just in the UK, but across the whole world. I don't think I ever imagined the general population starting to understand terms like RNA and all the different types of vaccines that we're now becoming familiar with. We actually, in the vaccines team, commissioned some research about a year ago, well, it's just over now, but looking at how the media covered vaccines and whether vaccine development was something that people were interested in. And I think at that time, we found that there were no stories whatsoever about vaccine development. There was interest in vaccine hesitancy, but really relatively little underlying coverage, discussion, communications activity in that vein. A year on, obviously, this is headline news. You barely go a day without there being a story about a new vaccine, how it's being rolled out, how it's being developed. People understand the terms efficacy, effectiveness, clinical trials in a way that we could never have imagined. And I think that's both positive and offers challenges as well. So we have a huge increase in the level of understanding of vaccines and people asking questions that perhaps they might not have asked before. I don't think there's going to be any going back to the sort of classic ways in which vaccines were communicated. So the very simple messages of vaccines work, vaccines are effective, just take them. We've had to develop much more sophisticated ways of engaging with the level of very understandable human interest that there is. I get it personally. Friends ask me, how were these vaccines developed so quickly? And You know, do they work? Are they, can I trust them? And I think it's incredibly important that we understand and accept that people will have questions. And that's something that comes out in the evidence base around how we build understanding and trust. But on a human level, I think anybody who works in this field can understand it. One thing I really do hope, this has been a hugely challenging year for so many people around the world in many different ways, that this has built an understanding of the role that vaccines can play in our lives in tackling these disease threats. I think for some time, some of us at least have taken for granted the level of health that we experience on a day-to-day basis. This isn't true in all parts of the world. There are many countries that still face infectious disease threats every day. I'm always very struck that we've had huge attention on COVID, but TB leads to around 1.5 million deaths every single year. That's the same really as what we've experienced with COVID in the last year. So I hope that there'll be renewed attention on some of the diseases that affect parts of the world that aren't as rich, that aren't the high income countries, and that we will use what we've discovered through this huge process of scientific advance on COVID vaccines and apply that to some of the global health threats we face and the other infectious diseases that do continue to affect so many people's lives.
And those disparities are massive. And I'm going to get into that with you in just a few here. Ethan, we've mentioned trust in vaccines. Educate us on, you know, what is the global state of trust in vaccines? And how is it playing an important part in really the attempted unraveling or dissemination, I guess, of this new COVID vaccine variants?
So I think it's worth stating that globally from 2018, overall, trust in vaccines, feeling vaccines are safe, is very high. But I think what's really worth pointing out is these real global disparities in trust in science, in trust in vaccines across different parts of the world. So, for example, whilst about 87% of people in Africa agree that vaccines are safe, within North America, that goes right down to 72% and as low as 59% in Western Europe. So I think there are real kind of disparities there. So I think that forms a really important context in terms of understanding vaccine acceptance with regards to COVID. And we are doing a lot of kind of polling around that. But I think that is something that, you know, we should have anticipated, certainly in terms of parts of Europe where there was hesitancy, that this is not news. This is something that we knew already from our 2018 Global Monitor. So I do think, there are positive attitudes. We are seeing changes in attitudes towards the COVID vaccine. Gallup asked questions around attitudes in August, December 2020, before the full rollout. And what we're seeing is there was slightly more hesitancy there compared to kind of more recent surveys where people are starting to feel more positive about this.
I think we are seeing a real rebound actually in the levels of confidence, and that perhaps because it's understood and people are seeing the impact of vaccines in some communities now as helping unlock and bring the pandemic, you know, hopefully closer to a close. We are seeing levels of confidence increase, but actually also seeing some challenges on the ground in terms of delivery in countries where there is a lack of supply of vaccines, of COVID vaccines. So it's a really mixed picture, but I'm optimistic that we're seeing actually some increased confidence as a result of the higher profile nature of these COVID vaccines.
And some of the places where leaders have taken very different positions on the importance of getting vaccinated or even really believing getting vaccinated. Tanzania is a really good example recently of a situation where the leadership was very much skeptical, unfortunately, apparently succumbed to COVID-19. But at the same time, public trust in vaccines hasn't really waned or decreased there. It's actually bumped up just a little bit. So it's always fascinating the timing of when we would ask these questions, and also just the political dynamic unfolding within the countries themselves. One thing I wanted to ask you about, Anna, is this immense vaccine access disparity now across the really, I wouldn't want to say developing world. It's really, if you're not in Western Europe or the United States or the UK now, sorry, I have to say that separately, you really have it's a challenge to get people vaccinated in mass numbers. Tell us about how big that challenge is and what's being done to address it.
Well, thank you for the question. I mean, I think this is the challenge really that we face this year in terms of bringing what's been a terrible global pandemic to a close. The information is really stark. Up until a few weeks ago, I think the same number of people had received a vaccine in the UK as the whole of the COVAX facility had delivered to across over 120 countries. So the COVAX facility is really the global multilateral effort bringing together the WHO, Gavi, UNICEF to deliver vaccines across the world to low middle income countries. There is a huge supply issue. G7 countries, high income countries, have bought up and purchased so much of the global vaccine supply. And it's very understandable. Countries naturally want to protect their own populations. But we really face a stark choice right now. We're seeing the coverage of vaccines coming up towards 50% in many parts of the world. In low-income countries at the moment, it's 0.8% of the population. Wow. So we're not even at a point where healthcare workers are protected in the great majority of parts of the world. Whatever way you come at this, whether it's an economic perspective and wanting to rebuild our global economy, or whether it's the sort of epidemiological medical perspective of saving lives, or, you know, the moral perspective of doing the right thing, you do come to the same answer here. We really do have to look at vaccination globally. We can't afford to take a country by country approach, however understandable it may be to sort of feel you want to protect your own population. And probably the thing to mention the most is if we let COVID sort of rage in some parts of the world and spread and continue to transmit, we increase the risk of variants developing. And we've seen what that means. We've seen with the variants emerging from India, but also South Africa, that they can change the nature of the pandemic, and also the variant that emerged in the UK. We really do have to make sure that we check transmission, address this pandemic wherever it is surfacing. And that means a global approach to vaccination. It is the G7 summit coming up very shortly, hosted by the UK this year. And welcome a calling on G7 leaders to really take this opportunity in this moment to commit to share the doses that they have contractual access to. And we have an estimate that we have, as G7 countries, there are around a billion doses, even when those countries have vaccinated their entire populations. So it's very important to realize that we're not talking about taking vaccines from a clinic or a fridge somewhere in the US or the UK or across Europe. These are vaccines that we have contractual access to, but in all likelihood, we don't need for our populations. And it's really vital that those are shared quickly, because the supply is scarce right now. And the Serum Institute in India is one of the major manufacturers of vaccines for the whole world. And export controls have been put in place. So the supply that was coming from the Serum Institute now isn't reaching across the world. So it is a really critical situation. I really hope and certainly welcome our urging global leaders to be on the right side of history, to do the right thing right now. And only through that kind of action can we start to really have the change and change the course of the pandemic and bring it to a close.
And of course, those export controls were put in place because of the tragic situation unfolding in India right now with the virus. And it really, you know, just further drives home all the points you've been making, Anna. Ethan, tell us about this dichotomy. Is there a dichotomy? To me, it seems like a very concerning irony that there's a lot of countries that don't have access to vaccine, but their populations have a lot of trust in vaccine if they had access to them. And then, you know, I sit here in the United States, where a lot of people that have access to vaccines are very skeptical, not a lot, but a considerable number of people. Talk to us about how the data highlight those despair. Is that really the case? Does the data pan that out?
Yeah, so definitely, you know, as mentioned, there is this disparity in trust in vaccine between, you know, the first world countries and low to middle income and low income countries. Much higher trust, you know, as I said, in Africa, perhaps maybe due to them seeing the visible impact of what happens when you don't vaccinate people. And pre-COVID, because they couldn't see it visibly around them about the impact of you not vaccinating your children, people perhaps are a little more skeptical. But I think there are other really important points here that might be more related to the wealthier countries. Firstly, I think that some recent research that I've been looking at is showing that social media, it can have a negative impact. Belief in conspiracy theories, QAnon, etc., can also have an impact. But there's also some really interesting research that was conducted by Professor Patrick Sturgis of LSE and other colleagues that looks at something really interesting. What it shows is that there is a strong link between public trust in science and trust in vaccines. And what he shows is that where people in society all are in kind of where there's a general consensus around high trust in science, that strengthens the trust in vaccines. But where you have societies where the average trust might be the same, but there are huge disparities, polarization between parts of society where trust is very high and very low, that has a negative impact on trust in vaccines. You may want to call it, you know, the Trumpian effect. Political leaders who create more divisive issues, that creates a polarization, and it's that polarization that can have a negative impact. And those are some of the issues, you know, in terms of the rise of populism, etc., within North America and Europe, that could have a negative impact on people's views about vaccines.
Anna, what? Let me ask you a question you've probably been asked a million times. What's your best advice to folks who are wanting to seek information about vaccines, but don't want to just be told, oh, it's safe, go ahead, take the vaccine? Where should they go? And what are the red flags to know this is information that's intended to confuse me, not give, make me have a better opportunity to make a better decision?
I think one thing I say to people who ask this question and to people who want to understand vaccines better is to remind them that this is still a really normal thing to do. Every year, over 100 million children worldwide get vaccinated. It is actually the social norm in our communities. And there is a risk when we focus on, you know, the admittedly wide issue of misinformation, it goes well beyond vaccines, that we forget that actually many, many people, our neighbours, our friends, are doing this day in, day out. So that is one really important message, actually, both for healthcare workers, for community leaders, to reinforce this social norm. And we know from the evidence that that works to encourage people, to reassure people. But when we're getting into sort of specific questions that people have, maybe the first thing I'd say is that it's really important that we engage at a community level and understand what the context-specific factors are that mean that people might have a particular question or a particular uncertainty, and not jump to conclusions about what the causes are. I think quite often we're keen to think that there's one answer for why people aren't sure, but actually there can be many conflicting factors that we need to understand better. And time and again, the evidence base shows that when you want to improve uptake of vaccines, you need to engage the community. It was done brilliantly in terms of the Ebola vaccine rollout in DRC, but has also been effective in ensuring that the HPV vaccine, which can prevent cervical cancer, has had much improved uptake rates across the world. And we're getting close, actually, to a point where we can see that vaccine potentially eliminate cervical cancer in our lifetimes, which is an incredible achievement, which leads on nicely, really, to another point I make, that really it's important that people who communicate about vaccines do so positively and give positive stories and information and clear explanations. There is a lot of evidence to show that myth-busting doesn't really work that well, because what people tend to remember is the myth rather than the reason why it isn't true. It's an incredible fact that, and it surprises me every time, but it does make sense. The thing that you remember is that powerful nugget of a story that placed a seed of doubt in your mind. And there have been studies where people have fully believed the rebuttals, but if you ask them later, they still remember the myth. So put it, I think there's an onus on those in the health field, but also more broadly in the media, to act responsibly and really promote positive stories and balanced stories. We've been trying to really make sure that our tone isn't over-optimistic or saying that there's no risk whatsoever to having vaccines, because there are very, very tiny risks, but they absolutely pale into insignificance compared with the risks associated with the disease. But we do have to be honest with people. We can't, it's very important not to treat people as if those questions and concerns aren't valid, and to be honest, to be clear, to have good stories, to have engaging information. And it's quite incredible, actually. There's a lot of organisations and initiatives that have stepped up to communicating about vaccines really well. At Wellcome, we've launched our own vaccine, COVID vaccine information hub, to really provide clear, simple, accessible information on vaccines. WHO, UNICEF all have similar initiatives. There's a brilliant project called Team Halo, Project Halo, where they've worked with scientists around the world to create really interesting content on TikTok to actually explain the science and take people into the lab to see that it's not what they think it is, to actually meet the doctors, to meet the scientists, to see the process in action.
That's Anna Mauser and Ethan Greenwood from Wellcome Trust. Anna, Ethan, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be on.
Thank you.
That's our show. Thank you for tuning in. To subscribe and stay up to date with our latest conversations, just search for the Gallup Podcast wherever you podcast. And for more key findings from Gallup News, go to news.gallup.com or follow us on Twitter at Gallup News. If you have suggestions for the show, email podcast@gallup.com. The Gallup Podcast is directed by Curtis Grubb and produced by Justin McCarthy. I'm Muhammad Yunus, and this is Gallup, reporting on the will of the people since the 1930s.